The Legends Radio Network now presents Lyrics and Legends with your host, Gary Webb.
The program is Lyrics and Legends. In the studio with me, a new friend and current co-host of Lyrics and Legends.
Today,
my co-host had a prior engagement, so I got Mike Fuller to come over, and we got a really good one today, Mike.
Oh, this is great. Thank you
for coming. Yeah, so I called or text Mike, and I was like, I need help. Come over, and I got Jimmy Dale Gilmore.
Right, and I said, are you serious?
And I was. So you guys drove over to sit in with us, and this is going to be a lot of fun. The program's called Lyrics and Legends, and I feel like we nailed it with Jimmy Dale being on the program.
Right?
What a true Texas music legend. Welcome to the program, Jimmy.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
We are excited to do this and get to visit with you. Our station covers, the coverage area is Amarillo and then the eastern Texas Panhandle and western Oklahoma. So I know you got a few roots back in Amarillo, don't you?
I sure do. I was born there.
We don't want to pin you down on on years. I don't want to give up your age or anything, but it was...
No, it's public knowledge.
It's on Wikipedia, right?
A week ago yesterday, I had my 100th birthday.
Well, you're looking pretty good for being 100.
That's right. Every birthday now, I say I'm 100. That's my routine.
Heck, why not? I mean, might as well shoot high. Talk a little bit. How long were you in the Amarillo area?
Well, actually, my family lived in Tulia when I was born. My dad was in the Army Air Corps. He was actually in India when I was born. But my mom was living with his family, and we were in Tulia. But we had to go to Amarillo. My mom had, it was a difficult birth, and she had to go to Amarillo. That's where I was born. And so then, you know, as soon as we, you know, got out of the hospital and everything, we went back to Tulia. And then we lived in Tulia until I was 6 years old. Then we moved to Lubbock. I started the first grade the same year that my dad started Texas Tech.
Okay.
And we moved to Lubbock for him to go to Tech, and then I started school there. And the first 3 years of grade school, we were in Lubbock, and then we moved to Amarillo for a year. So I had my fourth grade was in Amarillo, and it was one of the actually happiest times of my school years.
Oh, that's great. So then you went back to Lubbock after that?
Right. We went back to Lubbock then when I was in the fifth grade, and I was there until, a little bit of college and then starting to roam around and do music everywhere.
So, Jimmy, when did you start playing guitar?
Well, I probably started, learning a couple of chords. My dad was a guitar player, and so he taught me my first few chords. But oddly, my dad was an electric guitar player, and I never did learn to play the electric guitar. I even still try to mess with it now and then, but I just never got the knack, and I always gravitated to the acoustic guitar. And, of course, my dad, he knew chords. He knew how to show me how to play a few chords, and I probably was, I guess when I very first started kind of messing around with it, I probably was a teenager. I probably was, 13, 14, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for people that are just tuning in, we're visiting with Jimmy Dale Gilmore, and for people that may go, who the heck is that? Well, it's just like a roadmap of Texas music history.
Because they're not from around here.
That's right, because they're not from around here, but we do have those. Jimmy grew up in Amarillo or Tulia and Lubbock and played with the Flatlanders, Joe Ely, Butch Hancock.
Butch Hancock.
Right? Then had solo recording careers, been in movies, The Big Lebowski, along with others. So kind of catch people up on who we're visiting with here, and then kind of want to keep visiting about. You said you learned to play the guitar when you were, say, 13 probably or so, and then...
Yeah, I played the violin in school in Amarillo in the fourth grade. So that was really my first musical instrument was... But I never did get where I really got the hang of it, you really have to stay with it to play the violin.
Now, was that a school deal, or was that just...
That was at school. And I loved it. It was wonderful. But I think the guitar was better for me because to really play the fill of good, you have to have a really good ear because it didn't have frets.
Yeah.
On the fiddle, you have to put your finger in the exact on a guitar. You've got to get somewhere somewhere within the fret.
You kind of have a clue, right?
Yeah, if you have it in tune, it'll work no matter where you put your finger inside the fret.
So when you ended up back in Lubbock and kind of got serious, maybe started messing around playing a little music, do you remember kind of when you really started doing some public performances?
Yeah, well, that was quite a while later. I was by the time I was in high school, my senior year in high school, I started playing a few things. There were some places around Lubbock, and we had a folk music club, you know, and because that time was when all the explosion of folk music happened, and lots of people started playing the guitar, and it had been kind of rare before that.
You're kind of talking Mike's language. Mike has his own program called What the Folk. So he's pretty familiar with your style,
yeah,
right, Mike?
Absolutely.
And I still played. I was one of these people, you know, I really very much loved rock and roll when it came along. And I was just at the perfect age. I mean, it was right in junior high and high school when rock and roll got invented. And as a matter of fact, I saw Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash in Lubbock in about 1957 or so.
I was going to say, what a great place to grow up on me. Rock and roll is getting started in Lubbock.
Yeah, and then later on, I started to say I was one of those people that, even though, you know, I was completely immersed in country music. That's what my dad did, and that's, you know, I still love it just as much. But I never did. I also loved all the rock and roll when it came along, and I wasn't like a lot of my friends that abandoned country music because of rock and roll. I kept on loving the country music just as much as I loved rock and roll. A lot of my friends, rock, you know, they started thinking country music was really, you know, that was their parents' music, and that was, and in my case, it was my parents' music, and my dad was a player, you know.
So, right, so you kind of had it in your DNA.
Yeah, and I still love it just as much, but I was as much influenced by the rock and roll thing, and then the folk thing came along just at the same time that I was really starting to learn to play the guitar. So I learned how to finger pick guitar. I learned all the, you know, the styles by which you just accompany yourself. You know, you don't really have to have a whole band.
Right, like going back to the Earl Travis type stuff.
Travis picking.
Yeah. Yeah, and even beyond that, you know, like a lot of my music was from the, even, you know, back Jimmy Rogers and the Carter family. My original inspiration was Hank Williams. You know, he was my favorite from a very, very young age. And it's really interesting to notice how many different people have that, you know, including Bob Dylan, you know, and of course Elvis was influenced by Hank Williams, and a lot of the young new country artists they still revere Hank Williams as much as back then, you know. So
Hank Williams Jr. claimed that his dad wrote the first rock and roll song, because if you listen to the lyrics of Rock Around the Clock, it goes along with some of Hank's old rhythms, and so he thought he was an early influence on rock and roll, which I would probably have to agree with him if you look at
that. Well, I think very specifically that Moving On Over was...
Right, and I think that's the song he was talking about, for sure. Hey, we want to get a song in. We try to break every 10 minutes or so and get a song in. And
good idea.
I think you did, actually, one of Hank's tunes. I was trying to remember I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry, maybe. Did you do that
one? Yeah, uh-huh, I did that one. I've recorded two or three of his songs. That was probably the one that people noticed the most.
All right. What would you think if we played that here, and then we'll come back and visit a little more?
That'd be great.
All right, we're going to listen to I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry by Jimmy Dale Gilmore. We'll be back with more lyrics and legends right after this.
Hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is winding low, and I'm so lonesome I could would cry. Did you ever see a night so long when time goes crawling by? The moon just went behind a cloud to hide. The silence of a falling star lights up a purple sky, and as I wonder where you are, I'm so lonesome I could cry. Did you ever see a robin weep when leaves begin to die? That means he's lost the will to live. I'm so sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is winding low, and I'm so lonesome I could cry. I'm so
So the program's Lyrics and Legends. On the phone with us, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, and in the studio, Mike Fuller. Jimmy, we're having fun visiting with you. Where are you today?
I'm actually, I'm at my home, which is, my address is Spicewood, although I'm actually closer to Austin than Spicewood, but the Spicewood mailing area is real huge. So my address is Spicewood.
Okay.
Outside of Austin, out in the country, outside of Austin.
All right. For some reason, I thought maybe you were in Terlingua this week or something.
No, we're about to go there. We are going to go there.
Oh, okay. So you're not quarantined out in Terlingua yet.
Well, no. Although we will be when we get out there. Everybody is being very, very careful out there. My brother lives out there, and his family is with him. They're quarantined out there, and then we have a little house that we bought last year. And Butch Hancock lives out there.
Okay.
And Butch and his wife are out, we're in touch constantly. And we'll be, it's all set up there so we don't, it's real easy to quarantine out there.
Yeah.
Great.
True.
I'd say the only problem is the drive out there, it's pretty serious. It's pretty, it's a haul. It's almost 7 hours from here. And the main trouble is on IGN finding some place with a restroom open.
That's the great thing about Texas. We're probably 8 hours from you, and then, we're probably,
yeah, right.
I don't know how far it is to Terlingua, although I've been there, but it seemed like it was a day and a half to get there from here. Hey, you and I have something in common. We both attended Tech. Oh, so anyway, I went on the 1-year plan, I think. But
I think it was the 2-year plan. I ended up.
Well, hey man, you're like almost an associate degree or something like that. But one of my favorite things, and when I was at Lubbock, which was in 77-78, was watching Joe Ely and some of the old honky tonks down in Lubbock. And you guys met up down there. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, Joe and I got to be friends when I'm a couple years older than Joe, and I'm thinking I was probably about 19 and he was about 17 when we were fans of each other. We used to go hear each other play in the little old folk clubs. Joe was beginning to do some solo stuff. Joe had played in bands and stuff, much earlier than I did. I played totally solo until later on in the whole thing. But Joe and I got to be friends. We ended up doing some roaming around. I started to say touring, but it wasn't exactly touring. We were hitchhiking and sleeping on couches and stuff. But Joe and I did a lot of music together, and Butch and I had already been friends for a real long time, since we were in junior high. But we didn't play music together, and we didn't even know that each other had become music. We knew each other before either of us learned how to play, but we didn't learn how together or anything. It was separate. And then when we were in college, was when Butch and I found out that we both played and started playing together. And Joe and I were already friends before that. And also, I always have to mention, Terry Allen was a huge influence on all of us. And he and I were friends when I was in high school. He's a couple years older than me.
Yeah, we had Terry on the program too. And what a great interview! What a man. That guy has some life experience,
right?
Oh man, Terry is amazing. He was amazing back then. He was amazing when he was in high school.
We had Terry.
He just still is.
We had Terry on, and my co-host on that program was a lady named Deb Finsterwald, and she was actually related to Joe Harvey, and so they just invited her to come out to Santa Fe or wherever for a week. I didn't get invited, but Debbie did. So,
so Jimmy, while we're talking about that era, I want to tell a little story. I met you and Joe and Butch in 2002. You came to Amarillo and you did a meet and greet when the Flatlanders record came out. So,
oh, yes, I remember that.
So we sat around, we ate a bunch of great barbecue, and then you guys pulled out your guitars. And you told this story about meeting Townes Van Zandt.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was Joe that first met him.
Okay.
And Joe picked him up hitchhiking. and like I said, Joe and I were already acquaintances, and mutual fans of each other. We both really loved hearing each other play, but we didn't actually know each other, But I got a call from Joe, and he said, Jimmy, I picked up this guy hitchhiking, and he had a record with him. And he had picked up Towns, who was in a bad place, and Joe knew that. He said, "You can't catch a ride here." He took him over to the other. I think he was headed to Houston, and he was coming, I believe, from San Francisco. And he had a backpack full, not of clothes, but of his record. That was all he had in it, was his record, was copies of his record. And he gave one of them to Joe. It's his first record. And, of course, we never had heard of him. But Joe said that we got to get together and listen to this. So we got together and to listen to this Towns record. And then that was when it's kind of odd. We learned a few of Towns' songs, but basically Joe and I started learning each other's songs. And that was what started me and Joe hanging out together all the time. It's a funny thing. And Towns was totally unknown at the time. It was really fun. Years later, I got to be real, real good friends with Towns. And it was so much fun to tell him that he was real proud of that story.
That is a great story. I've told that story.
One of the instigators of the Flatlanders.
Yep. I've told that story so many times on my radio show. And right after you guys told that story that night, you did this just amazing version of Snowin' on Raton, 3-part harmony.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was just great.
Ooh,
it was just great.
I wonder if we could find that.
I don't think you guys have recorded it.
I don't think we have. We later on, it evolved that we did the Butch would do it, and Joe and I did the harmonies on. And it was it became part of our show permanently. We almost always play that when we do a show together.
I think one of my favorite Flatlander songs, probably Dallas. Did you write that?
Yeah, I wrote Dallas. Yeah.
All right, that would probably be a really good one to listen to right about now.
Yep.
You want to listen to Dallas, and then we'll come back, and you can talk a little bit about writing that.
Sure. And there's several versions to choose from. Joe's is probably the best known one, I guess. I don't know. But the Flatlanders, I did it on the first Flatlanders record. And we did it later again with the Flatlanders.
I listened to a really good version of the Flatlanders that I think Joe started, and I think you sang part of it. And I think maybe we'll try to find that one. And we'll be back right after this.
From a DC-9 at night. Well, Dallas is a jewel. Oh, yeah, Dallas is a beautiful sight. And Dallas is a jungle, but Dallas gives a beautiful light. Did you ever see Dallas from a DC-9 at night? Well, Dallas is a woman who will walk on you when you're down. But when you are up, she's the man you wanna take around. But Dallas ain't a woman to help you get your feet on the ground. And Dallas is a woman who will walk on you.
The program's Lyrics and Legends. That song we listened to, Mike Fuller, was Dallas, and that's always been one of my...
It's a classic.
Yeah. I always call it a Joe Ely song, but it's really a Jimmy Dale Gilmore song, I guess.
Yeah.
Jimmy, thanks for being on the program. Mike, I think he wants to run some stuff at you here.
So I'm always fascinated by the process, the infinite possibilities of the songwriting process, and I'm wondering what yours is, or if it's the same every time. I'm a songwriter myself, and I have no pattern. I mean,
I don't either. Really, there's a couple of things. One thing is that usually what happens with me is if an idea occurs to me, and lots of times it's been through my life, it's been like while I was driving for some reason. I don't know what it is. It's something about moving in the car and driving, especially by myself. That's when a lot of ideas have popped in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then my process, I'm really slow. I never have. Both Joe and Butch are a lot more prolific than I am. They always were all these years. But I'm a little bit too much of a perfectionist. But what happens is if an idea keeps occurring to me again and again, and I still like it, then I'll go sit down and go to work on it. But most of my ideas just kind of come through, and then they just disappear. They're never heard from again.
Do you start with music or with lyrics first, or again, is that the way it happens?
Both together.
Oh, really?
Almost always both together.
But nice.
It's a line. And that one, the Dallas, the thing about it is it actually happened. You know, I was actually flying into Dallas, maybe the first time I ever flew, I don't know. And it just sort of overwhelmed me how beautiful that was from the it's just the right time of night, just like it's at dusk. And even to this day, any big city from the air
is
like a jewel. It's really beautiful. And
I agree.
So in a way, I've said a lot of times that song isn't just about Dallas. It's about all American cities, and maybe about all cities in the world.
Yeah, that's a great song. I always have enjoyed listening to that.
It's one of the ones where the idea occurred to me, and I realized, it kept coming back, and I realized what a good opening it was, And so I worked on that song a long time because I thought I've got to make the rest of the song be as good as the first line. Because that first line is just a grabber for everybody.
Right. It's the hook.
Yeah.
That's great. So we have interviewed close to 90 different people on this program so far, and some of them well-known, some of them not so well-known. But the one thread we get on a lot of the people that grew up in your era, maybe would be a good way to put it, is there seems to be a pattern of, I don't know how many of these guys we've talked to that have either grown up in Amarillo or Lubbock, or maybe Amarillo and gone to Lubbock and then made the transition to California. And that seemed to be a pattern you followed too as well.
Yeah, I went out to California. I got married really young, and my wife and baby and I went out there. When basically we were teenagers, I was 19 or 20, and she was a year older than me. Jill Carroll was a year older than me, and Elise, our baby, was a year old. We went out to California, seeking our fame and fortune, and then our marriage didn't last all that long. It just lasted a couple of years. Came back to Texas.
Okay, so you came back, and did you come back to Austin then, or was it back to Lubbock?
No, back to Lubbock then. Although, pretty soon after that, I went to Austin. I visited Austin quite a bit in those days and played some, and then I really did move there in about 69. And at that point, Joe and I had already done a lot of stuff together, he and I both were spending some time in Austin, and we played some stuff together there and some separate stuff. And then I had a band down there. I got a band together. And of course, the history gets so intertwined. There's so many different musicians involved. Angela Straley was a really important part of our musical world. And I don't know if you are aware of her, but Angela was, she's a...
Mike Shakespeare.
She's a great player.
She's been in California for many years now, and her brother Al Straley was one of the best songwriters I've ever known, and we recorded, the Flatlanders recorded several of his songs. I've recorded usually nearly every record I've made. I've had an Al Straley song on it, and he basically is still kind of unknown other than that.
That's crazy.
But I was starting to say I was in a band with Angela down in Austin, and then she moved her band to California, and I didn't go with them. I stayed in Austin and started a band down there, and we it was called the Hub City Movers, which was the name. That was a funny name that had been taken from Lubbock was always called the Hub City, the hub of the plains.
Right.
And there was a moving company called Hub City Movers, and we had always thought that was just such a great funny phrase. So in Austin, we had a band called the Hub City Movers, and we played the grand opening of the Armadillo World Headquarters.
Nice.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
But then a little after that, I moved back to Lubbock, and then when I moved back to Lubbock, it so happened that the same month I moved back to Lubbock, Joe had been over in Europe. He came back to love it. And Butch had been living out in California. They didn't really know each other very well at this time. But he came back to town, and the three of us started getting together, and that's when the Flatlanders happened.
So what year was that?
That was in the 70s.
I was going to say, that's probably not a fair question. 79. It was in the 70s.
71, actually. Okay. And we our record came out in 72. Well, actually never came out, but it got done in 72.
When it came out in 1990, maybe?
It was made in 72. It was 10 years later, it was released in England. 10 years after that, it was released in the U.S. for the first time. So it was 20 years old when it was released to begin with.
Was White Freightliner Blues on that album, or was that different?
No, that was on my first, the record that Joe produced that was the first one just under my own name.
You know, okay.
The Flatlanders.
That's another one of my favorite tunes.
That was on Fair and Square, yeah.
All right. Hey, could we listen to that maybe? Throw that in here real quick, White Freightliner Blues?
Oh, that'd be great, yeah. All right. It's a Towns Van Zandt song.
All right, let's listen to that, and then we'll be back to visit with Jimmy Dale Gilmore right after this. Programs, Lyrics, and Legends. In the studio with me, one of my new friends, good friend. We've known each other for a month now.
Gosh, probably. About a month, yeah.
Mike Fuller, host of What the Folk on the local PBS station.
High Plains Public Radio.
High Plains Public Radio. And we kind of hit it off, and I had a really neat deal come up. We got Jimmy Dale Gilmore to agree to interview, and I was like, I got to call Mike and see if he can sneak over.
I'm glad to be here.
The Emerald City of Shamrock, Texas, to interview Jimmy Dale. And we, on the phone with us, Jimmy Dale, we just listened to White Freightliner Blues. Talk a little bit about that. You said that was a Towns Van Zandt song?
Yeah.
That's always been one of my favorites.
Me too. I love that song. I still do that. In fact, that song has become a standard around Austin. Lots of people do it just real routinely. And the Flatlanders usually do it. It is one of our staples.
So we were kind of talking about Lubbock. You'd gone back to Lubbock, and did you ever make any connection with Buddy Holly or the family or anybody while you were?
Well, yes, I did. I had, of course, you know, Buddy had been a big influence at a distance. I never did know Buddy. I never did meet him. You know, I was younger. We were all younger than him, but we loved his music. And he was sort of something that, you know, that Joe and Butch and I all had in common, the love of his music. And then, in that period, much earlier on, in the '60s, before ever going to Austin or California or anything, I met Buddy's parents, and his dad actually was the person that financed my very first recording.
Oh, wow.
And it was, which also, that was the first time that I ever had a band. I put a band together to do that recording, and that band included Joe Ely, and John Reed was in the band, Jesse Taylor, who's deceased now. And
yeah. Boy, he was a great player, wasn't he?
Long, staple member of our gang of friends. We always said the Flatlanders actually had about 20 members, and it was just only the ones that happened to be around and went and did the recording in Nashville that ended up being called the Flatlanders. But Mr. Holly paid for me to do a recording, so I put this band together, and then that band sort of, in a way, just sort of has continued to this day in different forms. All the different bands of Joe's and of Butch's and of mine, you know, all of them have been almost like offshoots of that, except my most recent one, which was Dave Alvin's project.
Yeah, we want to talk about that one too, for sure. That's there's some good music on that. I don't know, Mike, if you've got to listen to any.
I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet.
Oh, you're going to love it.
I saw that it came in to the radio station.
Yeah, you're going to love
it. Haven't listened to it yet.
So, one quick story here I wanted to throw in. We have a hometown son who grew up here and went into radio in Amarillo and then Lubbock and then ended up on some big station down at Fort Worth, Bill Mack. He was in Lubbock on the air when Buddy Holly passed away, and he's told the story about that several times and what an impact it had on him being in the music business. And I don't know, have you met Bill? Do you know him at all? Or?
No, there's a kind of a funny story about I was a fan of his. You know, and he was, because he was a radio personality, and he did commercials that were really famous in Lubbock.
Oh, Beads Fine Bread, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And he was a great DJ, and of course, when he became sort of like the main late night country DJ in the world, WBFP.
Right.
And he was somebody that I had really looked up to, but he was one of the people that thought that Dallas wasn't really playable for commercial country radio.
Really?
Yeah. It was odd because he was the gang of people, Shelby Singleton, who was the one that did it was his record company that the Flatlanders, as a matter of fact, you know, he bought the Sun label.
Oh, okay.
And the Flatlanders first, that very, very first record was on the Sun label, but it wasn't the old, it wasn't Sam Phillips. It was after Shelby Singleton had it. There's so many intertwining stories here, but he was, Bill Mack, you know, was a part of that gang, of friends, and Willie Nelson was part of it, that gang. You know, there were radio people. Of course, I knew the Lubbock branch of them.
Right.
But Waylon Jennings, of course, was one of them. You know, Waylon was one of my favorite DJs when I was really young.
Yeah, I think Waylon and Bill were at the station there in Lubbock at the same time, or maybe
not. Exactly. And so we were younger than them, you know, and they were like heroes to us. You know, that was one big disappointment to me that Bill Mack didn't embrace the Flatlanders.
Right, yeah, I can see that for sure.
He was big time then, you know. It
yeah,
was like,
so I will say this.
It wasn't really
When we started the stations up here, Bill, you know, being a hometown Shamrock guy, did a ton of stuff trying to help us be successful. So we've always got a place in our heart for Bill. And I think, you know, he went out of his way to make us do good, even though he didn't like Dallas, I guess.
Yeah.
Hey, Jimmy, we're going to run out of time. Well, go ahead.
I think Bill actually did like the song, but he just thought that it was inappropriate for the airwaves
right.
that time. And he might have been right, because he looked at it as being a put-down of Dallas, which is only partly true. You know?
That's great, though, to hear the history behind all that and get to know a little more about it. We're not out of time, but we got to keep moving or we're going to be out of time. I think we wanted to visit a little bit about we want to talk a little bit about the project you did with Dave Alvin that's new, the Downey to Lubbock album.
Oh, yeah. Well, Dave and I toured together Dave and I had been friends for 30 years, but had never done music together. And somebody came up with the idea. I thought I was retired a couple of years ago. One of the managers or something called and said, would you like to, you know, do some shows with Dave Alvin? And I said, well, yeah, I'd love to. I figured we would, you know, trade some, just the two of us. We toured Texas and New Mexico and Colorado and eventually, finally, California. In fact, the whole country, the two of us. And during that whole time, Dave said that from the very first show, he had decided that we were going to have to make a record together.
Oh, wow.
But he didn't mention that until much later on. But anyway, we did make a record together, and then we toured for another year with that, with a band. I really love the record.
When did this come out?
It came out the first of last
year. Okay. I knew it was fairly new. I didn't know.
Golly, I'm losing track now. I think it was 2019.
It's all this quarantine stuff. Yeah. Everybody loses track of days. You know,
I think it was the end. The end of the year.
I can't tell what day it is.
They said they need to go back to like it was when we were in grade school, where you had like the day of the week written on your underwear. So you know.
I don't know what day it is.
I really want to get. I might like to get a couple of these in. Downey to Lubbock's the title cut, I think. And then there was another one I really liked. Personally, I'm not the ratings guy or whatever, but Billy the Kid and Geronimo I thought was a really cool song. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. Dave is he's a great guitarist, for one thing, but he's also a great band leader and organizer and producer. And that's the rarest quality of a really good musician that's also a good organizer. There aren't many of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's usually maybe not compatible sometimes.
I would imagine that your voice and his complement each other pretty well. Like I said, I haven't heard the record.
Oh, yeah. You'll get it.
But knowing your voices, I bet that's wonderful.
They're so different from each other, and it's so, but the, it, it, we come from such a common place. You know, the music we love.
Right.
In common, so you can kind of tell it really worked well, because it's like, you know, Dave, my fans that weren't familiar with Dave really like him, and then vice versa. It's two different crowds, two different styles of music that we've been associated with, so we brought two worlds together there.
Let's listen to Downey to Lubbock, because I think that one contrasts you guys' voice real well and kind of show each other off, and then we'll come back and visit.
It kind of tells the story too.
Yeah, it does. It tells the story. So we're going to listen to Downey to Lubbock, and then your part's Lubbock to Downey, I think, isn't it? And we'll be back with more Lyrics and Legends right after this.
Blow in a roadhouse down. Texas wind blows through my veins. But it seemed like California was the place to be for a hippie country singer. That was me. And I'm leaving tonight, man. I'm Lubbock to Downey bound.
Living on dreams and gasoline. And somehow still surviving on Advil, NyQuil, and nicotine. Every city and every heartbreak, every hopeful kiss, every road I've traveled has led me.
Well, I took a lot of detours, called me sacks and dead ends. But I made a lot of music, and I made a lot of friends. I took a lot of turns, maybe some.
Program's Lyrics and Legends. In the studio with me, Mike Fuller, on the phone, Jimmy Dale Gilmore. And Mike, we've had a ton of fun visiting with
this has been great. Yeah.
Mr. Gilmore, right? And thanks for taking time to visit with us. We're gonna run out of time. We want to get another song in. Maybe we could just do Billy the Kid and Geronimo. So off the Downey Lubbock album. And we want to come back because we've got a really important part of the program we call the Department of Shameless Plugs with ominous music behind it, and you get to talk about whatever you want to talk about, okay?
Well, all right, although I don't even I don't have anything to plug. But, you know, this is my newest record. It's a year old, and it's my newest one. So.
All right. We're going to listen to Billy the Kid and Geronimo, and we'll be back right after this.
There's an old story in New Mexico about the night Billy the Kid met Geronimo. In a Lordsburg barroom, they spoke their minds, one hand on their pistols and cold blood in their eyes. Billy the Kid said to Geronimo, "My mother died young and left me all alone. So I grew up wild, my gun my best friend. I killed 21 men and I'd kill them all again."
Geronimo said, "I've nowhere left to hide. The land of my birth I don't recognize. There's railroads and barbed wire and towns without end. And my people are scattered like leaves to the wind.
We're just the same. We're cursed and we're damned as they whisper our names. We're hunted, we're hated, we're feared and reviled by every God-fearing man, woman, and child.
Said, no, we're not the same. For the harm that I've done, I feel great shame. But I fought for my family, my tribe, and my land. Yet we'll pay the same price for the blood on our hands.
Sun rose and the coyotes cried. The Chiricahua and the outlaw said goodbye. And the road crossed the desert their separate ways. One prison band and the other to his young grave. The other to his young grave. Thank you.
Well, the program's Lyrics and Legend. On the phone with us, Jimmy Dale Gilmore. In the studio, Mike Fuller. The song we just listened to was Billy the Kid and Geronimo. Did you write that with Dave, or is that something that you guys...
No, Dave wrote that one entirely. And we wrote Down East to Lubbock together, of course, because it's our two different...
two different perspectives, yeah.
But Dave was... we were going to co-write. He had partly written Billy and Geronimo, and then he kind of... we were out in California, out in L.A. doing the recording, you know, and so he gave it to me, and I was going to go home and write more of it. And we showed up the next day, and Dave had just gone... It just had come to him, you know, and he finished it. And when he played the stuff he had filled in for it, you know, I mean, golly, this, you know, I can't add to that. That's a great song, just as it is. Just, you know, the whole story and the whole sentiment behind it and the kind of, you know.
Yeah, it was a great, I loved listening to that. And plus, you know, we're close enough to that part of New Mexico that it kind of, you know, it's pretty cool. But, hey, so we're going to run out of time. And the Big Lebowski, talk about Smokey and the bowling scene before we do our Department of Shameless Plugs.
Well, that's the other, that movie has played an outsized role in my life.
It
was so amazing. And it's still mysterious to me that movie, after all this time, continues to just not only not go away, but just gets more and more well known, and you know, it's the cult following that keeps growing.
That one scene in the bowling alley is just like, that's classic. So we can't play that on the radio probably, but
yeah,
people can go Google that. Wouldn't be the same. So the Department of Shameless Plugs, I know you said you didn't have a lot to plug, but you got Janet back there taking care of business for you. You can tell people how wonderful she is, or you can talk about Michael or whoever you want to talk about. Tell, you know, if you don't have any music to plug other than Downey to Lubbock, you can talk about how great your family is or how wonderful life is or whatever you want to talk about for a couple of minutes here.
Yeah, we're enjoying this. And my son Colin has been doing a lot of online stuff. He's been doing it. He's a musician too, and you know, he's been doing presenting his music, and then we've been doing some and he's interviewing a lot of our younger musician friends here in Austin, people that I've gotten acquainted with because of him. But Colin Gilmore, you can look it up on, he's got his, you know, Facebook thing going, and they're doing I think he's doing two things a week where he does either interviews or sort of little concerts.
We watched you guys sitting on the porch last Thursday night. That was a lot of fun. And
I was getting
a kick out of it because you didn't know if it was on or off. Or
you never know.
You never know.
We didn't know.
And your music you can find on your website, JimmyDaleGilmore.com, probably.
Yeah, Janet has just been updating my website. It was all centered totally around the Downey to Lubbock. And so it's been about the same for a year and a half, and Janet catching it up to the... I need to write some funny stuff in there about quarantine or something.
Yeah, that'd be great. And Colin's got his own music page. Probably catch him on Facebook as well.
That's right. Yeah.
All right, Janet, you can tell her thanks personally from us for.
All right, Janet. Coordinate. Gary wants to thank you personally for
coordinating this, getting it set up.
No problem.
Funny, it's all like Gary Peanut, Ray Wiley Hubbard, you, everybody. And when I try to get a good interview, usually it's the spouse or partner or whoever that really comes through. And Mike Fuller.
Yeah, Judy's a really good one.
Yeah, Judy's good. So, well, thanks, Jimmy. We really appreciate you taking time to visit with us. I know you need to get out of here and get set up for your next call. We enjoyed it so much. If you're in Shamrock, you can always stop by the Legends Radio World headquarters and sign our big banner, and we'll treat you to some pizza from the restaurant down the street or something. So.
Okay, when we're able to get out again, we'll do it.
All right, thanks again for taking time. I wish we had about an hour more, but
right.
It is what it is.
Yep.
Thanks, Mike, for coming over.
Thank you, sir.
And Chris, thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks,
well, Gary. All right. Look forward to talking to you again someday soon.
This has been another edition of Lyrics and Legends with Gary Ware. Join us next time on the Legends Radio Network.